Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. All the news from the week here in the Roaring Fork Valley in the next half hour. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy.
And I'm Zoe Rome. This week we hear about a new plan to keep water flowing in the Roaring Fork River.
Glenwood Springs residents may soon see changes to their local bus services.
There's been a lot of action at the state capitol. Governor Hickenlooper has vetoed more bills than ever before.
Plus, we hear his reaction to the U.S. Supreme Court ruling about Masterpiece Cake Shop.
The biggest stories from this week coming up on Mountain Edition. The city of Aspen has cut back on irrigation at most parks across town to meet a goal of reducing water consumption by 10 to 15%. But Wagner Park, in the city core, is managed pretty differently.
Tents have started to go up in preparation for the Food and Wine Classic. And all that weight, plus heavy foot traffic, is really hard on the grass at Wagner Park. Matt Kuhn is with Aspen's Parks Department.
Most of that park is essentially killed following the event.
About 70% of the turf dies. Those damaged parts used to be reseeded, and it took about a month to reopen the park. But for the past 3 years, the Parks Department has ripped out the dead grass and replaced it with fresh sod. That's under direction from City Council.
So that the park is green and open to the public by the 4th of July.
The old turf is turned into topsoil for other parks. With the Stage 1 water restrictions, Wagner will be one of the few in town that is watered daily.
We have to water the new sod as it gets installed and ensure that that gets established as well.
Kuhn says even with Wagner Park's special treatment, the Parks Department will reduce its water consumption by about 15% from last year.
Governor Hickenlooper has vetoed bills on everything from marijuana consumption and tobacco prices to open records for autopsies. Binta Berkland has more.
The governor called a proposal to restrict conflicts of interest on the Sex Offender Management Board overly broad and redundant. He says a bill that would have allowed dispensaries to apply for a tasting room license violates the Constitution and Amendment 64 because, quote, marijuana consumption may not be conducted openly or publicly in a manner that endangers others. Hickenlooper also vetoed a bill that would have banned the public from viewing autopsy reports on the deaths of minors. He said an informed public has societal benefits for all at-risk children present and future. This is the last week for Hickenlooper to either sign, veto, or let bills become law without his signature. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
In all, Governor Hickenlooper vetoed 9 bills this year, the most he's issued since taking office. As Benta Berkland reports, he's being criticized for some of those.
Marijuana advocates are upset that he vetoed a bill to allow some dispensaries to set up tasting rooms, another measure to let public companies invest in marijuana businesses, and a proposal to let medical marijuana be used as a treatment for children on the autism spectrum. Before he issued the autism veto, he said making it law could send the wrong message.
If we sign that bill, we end up, without question, we end up in some way encouraging more young people to look at this as an antidote for their problems, right?
Hickenlooper added that using medical marijuana for autism needs more research. Supporters say they are disappointed and frustrated that the governor seemed to ignore all the hard work and concessions that went into passing these bipartisan bills. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Yesterday, Hickenlooper instructed the State Board of Health to evaluate the safety and efficacy of medical marijuana for the treatment of autism spectrum disorders in children.
The Glenwood Springs City Council will decide if they'll change the Ride Glenwood Springs bus service dramatically over the next few years. Aspen Public Radio's Wyatt Orm reports.
Ride Glenwood Springs doesn't have that many riders. The service is costly, and the Roaring Fork Transportation Authority, or RAFTA, already makes a lot of the same stops. That's why the city might stop Ride Glenwood Springs in its current form and ask RAFTA to fill the gaps. Ride Glenwood Springs would then become an e-ride service, basically a city-run Uber.
The idea is that you would call for a ride.
That's city engineer Terry Parch. Riders would be calling SUVs and passenger vans for a ride, not buses. Parch says if the council adopts the plan tonight, they'll first ask RAFTA to realign its routes to include the Highway 6 corridor on the north side of the Colorado River. The city hopes to be piloting the e-ride service by 2020. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
At one point, hundreds of millions of beavers populated North America. But as settlers moved west, they trapped them to near extinction. Scientists say the loss of beavers caused immeasurable damage to mountain ecosystems. As Luke Runyon reports, efforts are underway to boost their numbers and in turn get us more comfortable with the way they engineer the environment.
It's early in the morning, and Julie Scamardo and I are wearing grayish-green chest waders trudging through mud to find a beaver meadow inside Rocky Mountain National Park.
These are like mazes. It's hard to get through a meadow and know where you're going.
Scamardo is a master's student at Colorado State University. She's studying how beavers alter landscapes. This valley is home to about 24 beavers, and moving through their habitat is like walking on a massive sponge.
Oh, God.
Well, they cause a lot of sediment deposition. We're kind of stepping through all that right now.
Few species transform their surroundings enough to make big ecological changes. Humans are one of them. Beavers are another.
They definitely are engineers, and they change their environment to suit them, and it also happens to suit a lot of other species.
Like birds, fish, and insects. And scientists have shown that we get lots of benefits, too. Beaver dams improve water quality, trap and store carbon, and replenish groundwater. That's why reintroduction projects are underway in states like Nevada, Utah, and Wyoming.
Hi, my name's Scott Hulker. I'm running for governor.
And the idea of using beavers to help with some of the West's water problems is popping up in unexpected places. Hulker is the Libertarian candidate in Colorado. I met him at his home.
And honestly, the first time I introduced this, I had 1 minute. Trying to explain the importance of beavers in a minute is impossible.
In fact, beaver reintroduction is one of the main planks of his entire campaign.
It's one part of many solutions, but it's a cheap solution. It's easy to do, and it'll fill up the aquifers, and that's what we want to accomplish, I think.
Bringing beavers back into areas that haven't seen them in a long time may seem like a novel approach, but it's been done before. Not long after World War II, the Idaho Department of Fish and Game relocated beavers throughout the state.
In preparing for the operation, beaver must be sorted for even size and weight.
In this promotional film, men dressed in slacks and tucked-in shirts load beavers into wooden crates with parachutes attached. Yes, at one point, we dropped beavers from airplanes.
Now into the air and down they swing, down to the ground near a stream or a lake.
Now that probably wasn't the best approach, according to Ellen Wohl, a geoscience professor at Colorado State University. She says reintroduction efforts need to be more targeted.
There are lots of places we can't reintroduce beaver because there's just too much urbanization and the river corridor is too constrained.
Wohl also says our concepts about beavers need to change. They're still considered to be a nuisance in many states, an animal that gnaws trees and floods basements.
There are a lot of ways to live with beaver, but you have to be willing to think about those or to think about other alternatives rather than killing the animals.
And it's not just our ideas about the animals that are problematic, says science writer Ben Goldfarb. In his new book, he says rivers and streams should be full of beavers and messy.
These sorts of beaver-influenced watersheds are actually, in many cases, more natural than, you know, the classic shallow, clear riffle stream that people like me like to fish.
Back in Rocky Mountain National Park, Julie Scamardo says sections of the park and vast swaths of the American West seem primed for a beaver comeback, but they're not showing up.
And so we're still kind of asking the question of, like, what else do you want? and having a beaver psychologist would really be the best for one of these projects, but we don't have any of those, so.
We might not know their innermost thoughts, but that's not stopping researchers like Scamardo from trying to boost beaver populations. And while they don't have any set plans for reintroduction, park officials have entertained the idea of bringing beavers in to help regrow vegetation along streams. Though they probably won't drop them from airplanes.
He's on his way now. His nose and his instinct tell him where to find the water. There's room here for a new home.
I'm Luke Runyon.
This story is part of an ongoing coverage of the Colorado River, produced in partnership with public media station KUNC in northern Colorado, with financial support by the Walton Family Foundation.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy.
And I'm Zoe Rome. And Elizabeth, we know that people listening to Mountain Edition want to stay informed about local news.
Absolutely. One of the ways you can do this is by checking out Aspen Public Radio's Facebook page to get updates on the latest news from across the valley.
You can interact with our station through comments on our posts and by messaging us directly.
This week, you can see photos from our Policy and a Pint event at Aspen Tap, where we tackled questions about affordable housing.
You can also check out a map of the Colorado Creative Corridor and photos of some of the stops along that loop.
Check it out by searching Aspen Public Radio on Facebook.
The four Democratic candidates vying to replace Governor John Hickenlooper recently discussed everything from healthcare and education to fixing the state's budget. Colorado Public Television hosted the debate leading up to the June 26 primary election. Binta Birkeland has more.
Lieutenant Governor Donna Lynn, former State Senator Mike Johnston, Congressman Jared Polis, and former State Treasurer Kerry Kennedy mostly agree on policies, but there are some differences, like healthcare. Polis backs a single-payer plan.
We're the only country in our state of Colorado in the industrialized world not to have universal health care. Let's get there.
While Lynn, who was at one time an executive for insurance provider Kaiser Permanente, supports universal health care, she's opposed to single-payer.
I'm not a supporter of the single-payer system because I don't think we can accomplish that in Colorado, and our voters rejected it in 2016.
On the education front, Kerry Kennedy and Mike Johnston have different views on a bill he sponsored to change how teachers are evaluated and base part of it on student growth.
The teachers feel demoralized by this. They know there's a lot more going on in their kids' lives than just what's happening in the classroom. Other states that have taken this approach have backed off, and they're absolutely within their right to make that your record.
Kennedy is referring to a TV ad attacking Johnston's bill. All the candidates signed a pledge to run positive campaigns. She said she wouldn't call for it to be removed because it's from the PAC Teachers for Kennedy and not from her own campaign.
There are differences in our approaches to education policy, and it's important that the teachers have the ability to express their opinion in a race that matters to them.
But Johnston fired back, saying Kennedy supported the teacher evaluation measure.
In 2012, you called it a national model that helps gives us the tools to drive towards student achievement. So I don't know when you changed your mind on that. It's published under your name.
As he was talking, she quietly said she didn't remember that. The Teachers for Kennedy ad also attacked Polis for being pro-school voucher.
For what I can tell, the attack on me was based on an op-ed I wrote almost 20 years ago.
While in Congress, he says he's never backed vouchers.
And I have a 100% voting record. I have an A with the NEA. And it just seems to me it's a failure of leadership to stoop to that level and attack fellow Democrats.
Polis and Kennedy are considered the front runners, followed by Johnston and Lynn. All were asked how they would handle the next recession, which could happen in the next 4 years. Lynn said she'd increase the state's reserves to 10%, something she tried to do this year.
That's prudent. We didn't get that far, and clearly we have some pent-up demand for things like roads and education. So it was a little bit of a balance, but I would definitely say that next year we've got to take the tough step of adding to our rainy day fund that we have.
She's not the only one who wants to increase the rainy day fund. Kennedy does as well, saying the state must invest wisely.
And I took steps to move state investments, taxpayers' money, out of risky Wall Street investments so that here in Colorado, taxpayers didn't lose money in their state investments in the same way that other states lost hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars.
Johnston would look to make changes to state laws to reduce spending.
Stop criminalizing mental health, stop criminalizing drug addiction, and stop criminalizing poverty. Those kind of reforms are some of the few big ideas in the state that would actually save the state hundreds of millions of dollars in the state budget, and that would be where I would start.
Polis also wants to reform sentencing laws and said if governor, he would focus on job growth, touting his own experience as an entrepreneur.
And empowering people to be able to support themselves and perhaps someday even create jobs for others is what an economic recovery and economic growth is all about. I'm the only one who's done it.
The Democratic primary for governor has been spirited and is expected to be close. An added uncertainty is the fact that for the first time, unaffiliated voters can participate in party primaries. I'm Binta Birkeland at the state capitol.
three of the Republican gubernatorial candidates discussed major policy issues from healthcare to marijuana in an hour-long debate hosted by Colorado Public Television and CBS 4 News. But the presumed frontrunner, State Treasurer Walker Stapleton, was notably absent. Again, Benta Berkland.
Organizers say they gave Stapleton 7 different dates to choose from, but for this debate, the only participants were former Parker Mayor Greg Lopez and businessman Victor Mitchell and Doug Robinson.
Where's Walker?
That's Robinson.
He's not here. I'm not surprised. He doesn't show up at half of our events. We have worked, all of us, the state and every small town and so on. He's not there. He wasn't here on para reform. He says he's been the voice on para.
Stapleton is seen as the establishment candidate. Mitchell says his early edge coming out of last month's state's nominating assembly is a non-factor.
There are certain party establishment people that love Walker Stapleton because basically they can give him tremendous amount of special interest money and they feel he's more predictable. They can probably control him better.
Mitchell, Robinson, and Lopez are all running as party outsiders. Lopez says he doesn't care who the GOP officials support.
I don't pay attention to it because it's the voters. They don't speak for the voters.
But just who is the least establishment among the three? Robinson and Mitchell got into a heated exchange about it after Robinson noted that Mitchell has run for office once before.
He calls himself the only outsider in the race. He said this again and again. I'm the only one. I've never run for office. Victor was a representative. He's the only one of us that has actually been elected to the state house.
Doug, are you really serious? You're George Romney's grandson. You're Mitt Romney's nephew.
That's Mitchell.
I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a business owner for 31 years. I spent 2 years in the legislature a decade ago, and I went back to the private sector. It's a bit rich. It's misleading.
Robinson seemed frustrated at the Romney reference.
I am frankly tired of this attack on my family. I mean, we don't choose our family that we grow up in. I grew up in this family. It isn't some dynasty.
But the candidates did find things to agree on. For example, none want to raise taxes for transportation funding. All want more transparency in health care costs. And each thinks President Trump's policies, like tax reforms and judicial nominations, are leading the country in the right direction. When asked what Trump policy they disagree with, Robinson says trade.
I don't think that his policies that he's put forward on tariffs and trade are good for Colorado. They're not good for our beer industry. They're not good for our farmers. So I disagree with him on that.
Mitchell says he also disagrees with tariffs on U.S. allies like Canada and questioned Trump's management style.
The biggest policy problems he's had is by putting a team together, and he's had a lot of turnover, as we all know, various different positions.
Lopez thought Trump is really helping the country.
You know, and I can't really think of one that I would say I don't agree with. Perhaps there's one where I could say he might have taken a different approach. That would be the NAFTA. You know, and how we're dealing with NAFTA, with Canada and Mexico, because they're so close to our borders.
They don't all have the same stance on marijuana policy and the 3 marijuana bills Governor John Hickenlooper recently vetoed. Mitchell took issue with a veto on a bill to allow medical marijuana as a treatment for children on the autism spectrum. And Mitchell says he would have signed a bill to let publicly traded companies invest in marijuana businesses.
I've come a long way on marijuana. I've been reading up and really studying and talking to a lot of people.
For his part, Lopez says he was pleased that the governor took a cautious approach and vetoed both of those bills. Lopez also supports the governor's veto on marijuana tasting rooms.
It's going to be shocking, but I agree with him. I think really what Governor Hickenlooper is realizing is that he should have taken a stance in the very beginning.
Like Lopez, Robinson says he would have vetoed the bills, too.
We were sold at the time that through legalization, 3 things would happen. We'd get more revenues for our schools, the black market would shrink, and we'd keep it out of the hands of our kids. And we have not done a good job.
Each candidate wants to invest more money into mental health services. Mitchell says he doesn't think the state should criminalize recreational drug use like marijuana. Lopez also thinks Colorado is too quick to sentence people in some cases, especially those with mental illnesses or those who have experienced trauma. The primary election is on June 26th. It's also the first time unaffiliated voters will be allowed to participate in either the Republican or Democratic primary. I'm Benta Berkland.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Zoe Rome.
And I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy. In other Aspen Public Radio news, 3 Democrats are competing for the chance to challenge Republican incumbent Scott Tipton this November. Tipton has represented the Western Slope in Congress since 2011.
This week, we heard from all three Democratic hopefuls, Diane Mitzbush, Carl Hanlon, and Arne Menconi.
If you missed any of those interviews, all of them and more news are on our website now. Take a listen at aspenpublicradio.org.
Colorado's top recycling experts are gathering in Snowmass Village this week. They're discussing solutions for Colorado's recycling challenges.
The theme of the Colorado Association for Recycling's annual meeting is Who Needs China's Markets? Creating Solutions in Colorado. There are 12 roundtable discussions, and Executive Director Lori Johnson says the goal of each is to identify one action project for the next year. Much of the discussion focuses on creating a circular economy for each material that's recyclable in Colorado. For example, when you recycle a glass bottle, it's not only processed at a regional facility, it's also turned back into a bottle that is sold locally.
While we can collect and process a lot of the materials, we don't have the end markets for them.
Colorado does have markets for glass and steel. Experts are discussing how to create them for materials like plastics and construction waste. There will also be tours of the Rio Grande Recycling Center, Pitkin County Landfill, and Aspen Skiing Company's microhydro plant.
The U.S. Supreme Court says Colorado's Civil Rights Commission was hostile and biased against a man's religious beliefs when he refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple in Lakewood. Binta Berkland has more.
In its 7-2 ruling, the court said the Colorado Civil Rights Commission was not fair or impartial and violated the First Amendment rights of Baker Jack Phillips. One commissioner compared his deeply held religious beliefs to defenses of slavery and the Holocaust and called it a despicable piece of rhetoric. Republican Senator Bob Gardner of Colorado Springs spent time during this year's legislative session trying to bring more balance to the commission.
This is a black mark upon our state's Civil Rights Commission, frankly, a commission appointed by our governor.
Last month, Governor John Hickenlooper signed a bill to reauthorize the commission. The bill also prevents either party from having a majority of members on it. The Supreme Court's ruling was narrow in scope and didn't explicitly address whether a business can refuse to serve gay and lesbian people, but it did reaffirm anti-discrimination laws. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
A State of Education survey is available online for Coloradans to give their input on the future of K-12 education in the state. It's a project of the Education Leadership Council, an initiative out of the governor's office.
Bob Rankin, who represents Garfield County, among others, in the state legislature, co-chairs the committee. Prior to creating a new educational strategy, they are seeking feedback through the survey as well as town halls and roundtables throughout the state. The survey questions what Colorado's education goals are and how effective the current education system is at reaching those goals. It also asks what skills are necessary to prepare students to join the workforce. The Education Leadership Council will use data to recommend updated public education strategies throughout the state.
The arts campus at Willits, or Takah, brings performing arts to the Mid-Valley. Their current venue on Market Street in Willits is aptly named The Temporary. Basalt's Planning and Zoning Commission visited the site of their permanent location yesterday, Wyatt Orm reports.
The permanent space, known as The Permanent, is just down the street from The Temporary. Basalt's Planning and Zoning Commission will need to approve the site plan before construction can begin. Once everything is approved and Takah has raised the money, the new space is expected to take 15 months to build. The Temporary opened last August. Ryan Honey, Takah's executive director, says it's been a hit.
People were really ready to have a home for culture here in the Mid-Valley.
Honey says once it's built, the Permanent will provide a bigger, more versatile space than the Temporary. They'll also offer food, which they don't do currently. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
Carbondale, Salida, Crested Butte, Paonia, and Ridgeway are all certified creative districts here on Colorado's Western Slope. This means they've been recognized by the state as having a concentration of arts organizations and a plethora of cultural opportunities. They've joined forces with the Colorado Tourism Office to comprise the new Colorado Creative Corridor. It's a drivable loop connecting the five communities, with a recommended itinerary for each town that showcases the arts and cultural scene. As arts and culture reporter Kristen Kay found, small towns are looking to creative industries not just to bring in more tourism dollars, but also to give their communities an identity.
Welcome to Arts District on Rocky Mountain PBS.
There's a brand new 331-mile route of engaging experiences taking you through one of
the new Colorado Creative Corridor regions. Might be getting a bit of attention because it's the first of its kind in the state. Driving tours are nothing new, but one centered on arts and cultural experiences?
It is pretty groundbreaking, I will say that.
That's Jill Corbin, Director of Destination Development with the Colorado Tourism Office, or CTO. Part of her job is to help rural communities think about how to include tourism as a part of their economic plan. Andrea Stewart is the Executive Director of the Carbondale Chamber of Commerce. She's seen the arts transform Carbondale from simply being a bedroom community for Aspen into a destination in its own right.
Yeah, I feel like Carbondale has really put itself on the map, especially becoming a creative district. A lot of people are seeking different types of tourism.
The Carbondale Chamber knew they had something special, and that visitors who might not come to just one place would perhaps visit the region for a few different experiences. Stewart reached out to the other Western Slope creative districts. They pooled their resources and received a matching grant from the CTO to create a website promoting the loop. Visitors to the page can download maps and itineraries that spotlight art walks, theater, music, and film festivals, healing arts, and dining and craft beverage highlights in each destination.
So really our goal was to market and promote the creative districts, and with that comes economic development.
Tourism is big business in Colorado, and Jill Corbin says it's getting even bigger.
Since 2009, the state has posted a 37% increase in visitation, which is more than double the 17% growth in travel nationally.
Corbin says that the CTO is seeing a lot of Colorado's visitors returning again and again and looking for hidden gems. The point of the loop is to show that getting on the back roads doesn't mean straying further from rich cultural experiences like theater and music festivals.
They want to have that truly authentic experience, and that's where our rural communities, that's what they're really poised to provide the traveler.
Margaret Hunt is the director of Colorado Creative Industries, a nonprofit that supports the arts and studies their impact. She says that many small towns who need those life-saving tourism dollars have invested in the arts as a part of their economic strategy.
And we have been tracking over the last 5 years job growth and earnings growth in businesses in creative districts. And it's been anywhere from 4 to 6%. So it is the strategy that's working.
Many small towns lost jobs as mining and ranching industries declined. Carbondale itself was a coal town that suffered in the early 90s when mines shut down. But creatives who could no longer afford the pricey rents in Aspen moved down valley, helping the town find a new identity as a funky place filled with free thinkers and artists. Hunt says that the arts may be the best way for small towns to fill coffers and revitalize downtowns.
We want to see our rural communities have every opportunity to be resilient and to be able to diversify their economy so that they're not so dependent on one type of industry.
Andrea Stewart from the Carbondale Chamber of Commerce also says that the arts can play a powerful role in a small town's identity.
I think it's so important, and I think it really has a lot to do with giving it new purpose. I think it really gives hope.
And the Colorado Creative Corridor might be a new way to bring hope, not just to the five communities involved, but to other rural towns in the state. According to Stewart, a lot of eyes are on the loop, looking to see if it brings energy and dollars as these towns showcase their cultural strengths. Kristen Kay, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Zoe Rome.
And I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy. You can find more news from the Roaring Fork Valley and from all around the world on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow for Valley Roundup at 3:30, a deep dive into the week's headlines with local journalists and editors with Aspen Public Radio News Director Allison Bechtesh.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.